We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Telegraph magazine, read by Peter Donaldson.
Horse lover Rachel Hunter spends 3 months of the year in Epping Forest, where she divides her time between her studs and her husband.
Well, thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Charles Kennedy MP. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and a newcomer to the News Quiz, Maureen Lipman. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from The Guardian.
In the vanguard of the fight against obesity, Boots the Chemist has a promotion to encourage sales of its low-calorie Shaper sandwich range. The reward for each sandwich bought is a bar of chocolate.
Thanks to Ted Shepherd of Thirlwall for sending that. Jeremy, who left South London after looking up his friends in the north?
His friends in the north?
I'll give you a hint. It's a political question.
Can I do this?
If you want.
I don't know. I think it's Piers, isn't it?
It is.
It is Piers Merchant, who's little girl. There was some rumour that he'd been having an affair with an 18-year-old nightclub hostess, but the man was a senior Conservative, and I can't believe that. So they get up to that sort of thing. But anyway, she this little thing became a researcher, as nightclub hostesses tend to. Charles knows more about that than I. And the Sunday Mirror is going to burst the story. So he has chucked in the sponge, as it were, rather than use it. What was sad about it is there was no remarks about his todger. Unlike Bill Clinton's. I mean, we're so much more restrained a society than America. We didn't find anything out about Piers, whether it had a kink in it or any of that stuff. I think the country should be told.
I thought he was just helping her to write a book. She's writing a book about tabloids, and he's helping her, and she could win the Booker Prize if he entered her. But of course he didn't, of course.
The point is, the reason they're really down on him and they've kicked him out of Beckenham is actually not because he's doing stupping, thank you, Jeremy. It's a sort of Yiddish word, isn't it? Thank you. Anna Fox, but actually because he didn't turn up at the Tory conference. But what really got me about it was the fact that the wife appeared on the doorstep, and in order to... She backed up the story, of course, but in order to prove that he was a good family man, he bent back his wife's head and gave her a passionate kiss in front of millions of onlookers. Which, you know, I would have got two fingers firmly in the eyes from me at that point.
I loved it when you said that the Tory party was down on him. I thought, gosh.
Here's the question referred to the hostess, Anna Cox, who stooped to conquer Piers Merchant MP. She was said to be near collapse with all the fuss, but doctors say she's suffering from exhaustion. However, a couple of days out of bed should see her all right. The big question is, who will stand for Merchant's Beckenham seat? Conservative Central Office say it's probably too early for Michael Portello to make a comeback because too many voters still remember who he is. Charles, whose green fingers made oranges see red?
Is this some allusion to what's going on in Northern Ireland?
It is.
Yes. So, it must be this great hoo-ha that we've had in Scotland, I think, concerning transfer of prisoners.
Slightly more specific, green fingers.
Tony Blair went to Northern Ireland, shook hands with Gerry Adams, and Gerry advised him that it was very nice to see him, and they hoped he would be the last UK Prime Minister they would ever have to deal with, which must have got discussions off to a very positive footing.
2 points to Charles. Maureen, which third-rate country produced first-rate gaffes?
Oh, this will be the Queen's visit to India, where she's been kind of wrong-footed all along the line, even in the sense of making her wear black British Airways socks with her yellow and white spotted outfit, making her look like a beekeeper or a Hull City supporter. and all the way down this tour, there have been these terrible gaffes, and it's such a shame, because actually she never puts a foot wrong, does she? And it's a bit like an adolescent rebelling against his parents. The Indians have obviously worked this out before she ever got there, that they're going to give her a really bad time. So they printed on the Amatrice Memorial that 2,000 martyrs died there, and of course the Duke of Edinburgh never wanted to hold back, leapt up there and said, I thought it was 400. I don't know, it seems absolutely extraordinary.
Has she got a verruca? Is that the reason she's the only one with socks on? I mean, normally royals, you know, there's no, their toes are, you know, occasionally there'll be an American financier hanging off the end of one, but we think. But she can't have a verruca because she doesn't go swimming in public swimming baths, did she? So that couldn't be. What does she get for an after dinner speech, anyway? I mean, if Derek Nimmo gets $5,000, she must get a couple of hundred at least.
It was a visit of the Queen, Prince Philip and Robin Cook to India, marred by controversy, which included Britain being described as a third-rate power. The Duke of Edinburgh nearly caused a diplomatic incident over the Amritsar massacre, but neatly defused the situation by cracking a few witty Julian Clary-style one-liners about the black hole of Calcutta. Alan, your piece of music.
People say that once you come to Rome,
Never Leave You by Richard Chamberlain, Dr. Kildare.
It was Richard Chamberlain?
Yes. Alan, who were done in Rome as the Romans do?
Yes, yes. The home of gladiators. Remember gladiators? The professional ones that take on all amateurs and knock seven bells out. In this case, it was the Italian police. You know why? In Italy, the only uniformed Italians prepared to take on the British are the police. Normally, they turn around and go the other way, but in this case, they gave them a good hiding. Yes, I'm sorry about that. It may be that since we no longer have Montgomery and Wavell, that we have Tony Banks and David Mellor as our generals, they feel a bit of lead in. I saw Tony Banks, saw on the paper, accused the Italian police of indiscriminate clubbing. He's obviously seen several of them in Stringfellows. But I think that's what it was about. It was the English fans went to Rome and got knocked about a bit, and they couldn't get in touch with their consul or their embassy, or mainly because they're both words of more than one syllable. And they were left in choky.
Our new football spokesman, David Mellor, was incensed by the Italian attitude. And if he doesn't get an apology, he's threatened to turn ugly. And the scores at the end of round one are Jeremy and Charles 3, but Alan and Maureen taking an early lead with 6 points. Jeremy, which despot's appointment was a disappointment to potheads?
Now this is really a question for Charles, because he's a liberal and he's probably out of his head now, I should say.
have been for many years.
He's looking a bit red in the eyes there. Yeah. But, they've appointed a drug czar, along with the Alkopops Kaiser and the, and the joyriding sultan. I don't really understand why he has to be called a Tsar, presumably because he's woefully out of touch and he's bound to be overthrown at some point. But they've got this this highly respected police officer from Yorkshire called Keith Hallowell to try and sort out drugs, and he's going to say, "Don't mess around with that stuff, kids. Try this. It's the latest thing. It's called a frisbee."
It'd be very good if he had a drugs Rasputin to go with him. Evil bearded dwarf who carried his stash everywhere.
That's no way to talk of the Foreign Secretary.
Charles, who needs you in a model army?
Oh, of course, this is the new poster. Yes, this is the new poster. We're kind of back to the future, aren't we, in terms of recruitment. And that old famous poster, "Your country needs you," of all those years ago, what, the Kitchener era, I suppose it would have been, wasn't it? Has been updated with new faces, some would expect, because probably the person in it originally is, I doubt, still in uniform. Well, might be still in uniform, but I think it may also be someone else in uniform. So the army have relaunched this. They've had a revamp, and they are appealing to the ethnic minorities in particular, which is, I suppose, a very correct thing for them to do, and they are trying to modernise their image with a very old poster, which I don't actually, personally speaking, think is a very good idea.
The army's recognised that there's this problem of the black recruits being humiliated and tormented and beaten and stuff, and they've also realised that there aren't actually enough of them to go round. There are some barracks where they have no black people to persecute at all, which is very bad for the morale of the forces. So they're trying to get more scapegoats into the army.
They should have used Paddy Ashdown, actually, for this. I mean, he's got a good military background.
He's not incredibly black, though, is he, Paddy? Mind you, the guy in the poster did have a white hand. Did you notice that? It's nice, because it's sort of integrated. Like a sort of Benetton poster, wasn't it, really?
So, 2 points there. Maureen, listen to this.
Go West.
Whose X-rated performance had the West going wild?
Yeah.
EX-rated performance.
Is this Mr. Major's speech?
Very good. Yeah. Thought you'd get that.
Right. Okay. This is Mr. Major. He's taken the old Thatcher route to the Midwest. And he's done a big speech out there for 20-odd minutes or something, for which he was paid a disgustingly obscene amount of money. Although, I think that was only about half of what Maggie got, wasn't it? Something like that, yeah? So he's on the Derek Nimmer circuit, basically, now, he's Major. And very happy to be so. I don't know what he talked about, I suppose. Being a prime minister, I suppose.
Did you get 30 grand a speech, Charles?
No, I'm afraid I don't. I absolutely saw it all. No, that's...
They don't pay in Parliament, do they? I mean, there's no brown envelope given to you by the Speaker after a particularly good display, is there?
Not particularly. I mean, although I am totally up the number of questions I'm answering on this programme tonight, because obviously that will affect the invoice that I'll put into the programme producer
afterwards.
It'll
affect the invoice, it certainly won't affect the cheque. This was the lecture visit made by ex-Prime Minister John Major, who was paid $30,000 to speak to Americans on the subject of success, roughly the equivalent of William Hague lecturing ZZ Top on hair growth. Within seconds, he had the audience glued to their exits, and finally he left the stage to chants of John, 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 which turned out to be a coach party of OAPs looking for the toilet. Alan, who wants to spoil it for electoral spoilers?
This is Tony. Tony doesn't want any more fun. This is New Labour, but no new raving loony parties. What he doesn't like is the idea of people standing who've got, who deliberately changed their name by deed poll. He's probably terrified Lionel Blair will become Prime Minister at next election. he's determined to stop this happening. And you won't be able to stand unless you're a terribly serious person. That Piers Merchant.
This is Tony Blair's plans to outlaw candidates who deliberately mislead voters at elections. The move was welcomed by David Mellor, who feels he lost in Putney due to the intervention of a spoiler candidate who changed his name in an attempt to pass himself off as the real Mr. Mellor. However, Mr. Smug Adulterous Git said he would have lost anyway. And the scores at the end of round two are Jeremy and Charles 7, but Alan and Maureen still in the lead with 10. We start round three with a headline from the Times.
Groins add to the strain by Lynn Truss.
Thank you, Tatiana Hobby of Leamington, for spotting that. Jeremy, which OT goes OTT on the X rating?
The Old Testament is full of smut and filth and violence, and the canon is trying to repackage the Bible on this basis. There's not much in the New Testament. The New Testament is basically about sort of catering for large numbers. I always have a vision of, you know, the loaves and the fishes of 5,000 people opening their sandwich and saying, no cream cheese. But there's not much sex in the New... You know, it's all pretty clean, the New Testament, apart from there's a bit where he sits on the right hand of his father. But... there is, of course, Get Thee Behind Me, Satan, as well. But, no... Most of the stupping is in the OT, and that's isn't it? Yeah, and it's all Song of Solomon and all that stuff.
My team leader has ruined religious services for me for the rest of my life now. Anytime I'm in church and I hear that particular reference to the right hand of the Father, I'm going to think something that's going to condemn me to hell.
Could mean anything. It could mean he's a glove puppet. We don't know.
Charles, listen to your piece of music.
Just to claim a few lines from Othello, and I'll think you're a heck of a fella. If your blonde won't respond when you flatter her, tell her what pony told Cleopatra. And if still to be shocked she pretends well, just remind her that all's well that ends well. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow.
Charles, who might have needed his head examined to be barred?
Well, this may just be a reference to Shakespeare, and I have seen something about Shakespeare in the press this week, but it wasn't a report of his death. I can't. Mr. Corn, you're better than me. No.
He anticipated Freud, is what they said, that Shakespeare was a very good psychoanalyst. And
who said this?
It was said. It was said. They didn't say.
Sorry, what you mean is you don't know.
It will have been researched by the Hudson Institute, almost certainly. But anyway, they said that Shakespeare, all psychoanalytical theory, not penis envy. He never came up with penis envy. I've never really understood penis envy, but certainly no one would envy Bill Clinton. Apparently it turns it right out. You really wouldn't, and then you just go over a bridge, and at the end of it, it's got this wart.
A lovely flower.
We were saying earlier, we love the fact that his lawyer went, it wouldn't happen in England. Clinton's lawyer appeared on television last night describing the genitalia of the most powerful man in the world. And they said, no, it's perfectly, I mean, the president's tackle is perfectly normal and standard size. And all around the world, 200 million men crane forward to find out what standard size was. And the lawyer shut up.
This is the notion that William Shakespeare was the first Freud, which may go to prove the theory that many male psychological problems are rooted in a fixation about getting the complete works. Lovers of the Bard's Word were amazed to find the first draft of Macbeth included the classic Freudian line, "Is this a donger that I see before me?" And in Midsummer Night's Dream, Puck promises to put a girdle round the earth in 40 minutes, a blatant excuse to borrow his mother's underwear. Alan, what food isn't Carrier's bag?
It's that great cook, Robert Carrier, who introduced Britain to sophisticated food 35 years ago, was a fine restaurateur, and produced a book called Great Dishes of the World. And they were things that subsequently killed most of the people that ate them, because they were full of fat and cream and cheese and all that. And he's brought out a new one, saying you can't have Wiener Schnitzel, and you can't have lobster, and you can't have anything like that. What you have these days is a sort of squid eye with a spoonful of polenta, and you wash it down with soda water, and he's probably going to make a fat living out of that.
Mm. It's amazing the way that your food is piled up now in a restaurant. You have to deconstruct it before you get it on your plate, little piles of wilted rocket, pesto, polenta, pine nuts, but no dinner.
I used to like old-fashioned English cooking. The best thing you could ever say about anything was that it was very moist. Everything just used to be moist at its best. Oh, that was moist. Oh, no more for me. I'm saturated.
The scores at the end of round three are Jeremy and Charles 11, Alan and Maureen increasing their lead on 15. And before we start the final round, here's an item from the Newcastle Evening Chronicle sent in by Eleanor Johnson of Northumberland.
CID officers in Durham may soon be issued with yellow baseball caps to make undercover officers more easily identifiable.
Thanks for that. Jeremy, your song.
Yeah.
Why might happy families be walking tall?
This is Aaron Cobbler's. The idea that shortness is caused by arguing parents. Now, shortness is hereditary, and short people are belligerent and bitter and unpleasant. I speak as a man of 5'6", and therefore, belligerent, unpleasant people, parents are likely to be short and therefore have short children. Now, some scientists have come up with the idea that if you argue and bicker, it will stunt your children's growth. Well, frankly, the children shouldn't be listening. They should be in another room watching television.
This is a study which suggests that children born into rowing families tend to be shorter than those from more stable backgrounds. However, there are advantages in coming from an unhappy home. If things get really bad, you can always get out through the cat flap. We've also discovered this week that children shrink when they get out of bed in the morning, a characteristic they share with the entire adult male population. One for the chaps there, or at least the married women. Charles, which doodle bugged Renaissance peddlers?
I'm writing something now.
Mm, very bad writing. It's... Are you a doctor?
Just pop your legs up here, let's take a real look at
it. Thank God we're on radio.
There. Can you read that?
Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes.
Yes, it's all about Leonardo da Vinci, obviously.
Should I tell them what it's about?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I couldn't...
Leonardo da Vinci did not invent the bicycle. It was obviously invented by an Englishman, Lord Bicycle, at the Battle of Raleigh. there's a doodle. Some monk drew a bicycle on something of Leonardo's in the 60s, and somebody said, bloody hell, Leonardo must have invented the bicycle, which obviously he didn't.
The answer concerns Leonardo da Vinci's bicycle, which was rediscovered in Milan in 1974. And say what you like about the Italian police, but you have to admire their determination in spending 400 years on a stolen bike. Further investigations have also proved that diagrams of da Vinci's helicopter are not only on a much larger scale than had been thought, but are also upside down, which means that the only thing he actually invented was the food mixer. Maureen, why might turning over a colourful leaf be a painful business?
This is really extraordinary that you should ask me that, because there was a picture in the paper, in the Telegraph, of autumn, the trees in somewhere like Vermont, or maybe Montreal, and it was so incredibly beautiful that I rang the Telegraph and asked them to send that picture. So, you know, isn't it an extraordinary small world? So, but anyway, the point of the article was that they say that the trees suffer to produce leaves of that amazing colour, which is bunkum, and that it really is the result of kind of very hot summers and very frosty nights and all sorts of things, and trees are obviously now going to need counselling full time. I suggest the Prince of Wales might be gainfully employed.
There's a register of old trees, and there's a thing about this in The Guardian. There's this very old yew in Wiltshire that's 4,000 years old. And it said in the article, dating yews is problematic. And I thought, not in Wiltshire, it's not.
It's the news that trees are said to suffer great stress in producing their autumnal leaves. A vivid colour in a tree means it's suffered extremes of temperature or drought. Mad tree syndrome is nothing new. A couple of years ago, a redwood became so deluded he tried to become prime minister. Points for Maureen. Alan, your final question. Who had a bad hair day when their cover was blown?
This man went to see a man called David Powney, because he, John Surtees, was bald. David Powney is a wig expert. David Powney nailed this syrup to the bloke's head, making him look like a very tall ferret. And he went out and he thought, this is a very good wig. I'm going to catch a bus and show everybody on the bus what this wig is like. And the bus went past, had a bit of a slipstream. And the wig followed it, came off his head, and the sound of a cork popping. It became unglued, and it cost him £880, and he's now suing Mr. Powney, or trying to get his money back, or have his head rethatched or something, I don't know. It was a terribly sad story. It shows what happens if you're vain about being bald and don't, you know, you don't come out and show it. I think I'm going to emerge from the hairy closet any time. The noise you can hear is my wig coming off.
Yes.
they? Why, Mr. Corrin, you're beautiful.
Beautiful. I know I'm supposed to say it.
Mr. John Surtees is demanding compensation from wig manufacturers after his £800 toupee blew off the first time he wore it. He complained to the manufacturers, who said it would never have happened if he'd looked after it properly. The instructions clearly stated it should be regularly groomed, fixed with double-sided tape, and given a saucer of milk every night. So before we reveal the final scores, let's hear what cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was sent in by Sharon George of Swords in County Dublin, and it's from Buy and Sell, a free ad paper. Husky Queen speedboat, with engine if needed, 2,400 or near offer, or will exchange for tractor.
Charles.
Well, Liz Brereton of West Yorkshire has sent in this American cutting, which details the second annual cow pie bingo. And what they're doing at Union City Athletic Field is releasing a cow at the centre of the 50-yard line. And people then place bets as to where the first legal-size plop will drop. There'll be a certified surveyor on hand to determine the exact grid location. A computer will randomly assign you to a particular potential plop drop area. And the official plop must cover a circle of 3 inches in diameter. This is the kind of fundraising we do in the Lib Dem. If it doesn't fill the circle, it will be considered a plopette.
Maureen.
This is from the Daily Record, and it's bottom line for banker. A bumptious bank manager was nursing a sore rear end last night. German-born Hans Sprach's pain came after a junior clerk brandishing a shotgun forced him to stick a pineapple up his bottom. This amazing incident happened in São Paulo, Brazil, after a row between the bank boss and clerk Juan da Silva. Sprach, 55, had told his worker, "The day you get a promotion is the day I stick a pineapple up my rear end." De Silva, 24, turned up drunk next morning with the gun and a pineapple. He told his superior to drop his trousers and begin the job in front of 16 employees. After 15 minutes of torture, De Silva sobered up and raced outside, only to be tackled by armed police.
Alan.
Brought a snippet from my own local paper, Hampstead and Highgate Express, just to show you what life is like in northwest London. It says, "Bull worker for sale, £8. Or would swap for heated hair rollers."
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores, which are Jeremy and Charles 15, but Alan and Maureen, this week's winners, with 19 points. And we leave you with a cutting from the Waddesdon Parish News, sent in by John Rogers of Buckinghamshire.
"Congratulations to Anne Rampton on 25 years as our news agent. The village shop is part of what's in life, and she can usually produce whatever one asks for, from an aspirin to a screw."
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Jeremy Hardy, Charles Kennedy and Maureen Lipman. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson, with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer, and the producer was Alan Evans.